My question for today is, what really was the issue of the Meraglim? What really was the issue? You know, what was going on? We all know this story that 12 Shvatim had one Meraglim per tribe, not including Shevet Levi, and that all the 12 Meraglim went into Eretz Yisrael to go check out the land and spy out the land, and that they came back and only Kalev and Yoshua were able to say good things, while the other 10 Meraglim said only terrible things about Klal Yisrael. We know that. We understand that. About Eretz Yisrael, I should say. And we all know that they had reasons. I mean, there's no question that they had reasons for why they were doing so. But the Chumash does not inform us of what they were thinking. It doesn't tell us where they were going. On the outset, if you would just read the Psukim, it doesn't seem so bad. I mean, they were telling the truth. Moshe Rabbeinu told them to go to the land and to go see what the land was all about, and they told the truth. The land has huge people that are living inside there. The land has a ton of funerals, which means people are dying. The land has these massive fruits. I mean, they were telling the absolute truth. It is an awesome place. However, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to defeat these massive giants. So on the outside, you would look at the Shvat, the Meraglim, and you'd say, well, they're telling the absolute truth. Kalev and Yoshua were going lifnim mishur at the din, seemingly, by putting themselves in line and saying, no, we'll be able to do anything we can. If our Kadosh Baruch Hu's with us, we'll do anything we want. And that's true. Obviously, that's true. But that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu asked. Moshe Rabbeinu asked them to spy out the land. They did exactly that. They did what they were supposed to do. And that's that. So I don't understand, how did they mess up, number one? And number two, what exactly was that mess up? Now, it is absolutely certain that this mistake that they made must affect us in some ways nowadays. In something that we do, it must have an effect on us, because the Torah would not mention it explicitly. And if the Torah doesn't mention it explicitly, it must be that it wants us to figure it out. There's something here that we have to work on, that we have to look at and try to figure it out, and there's something there. So maybe that's just it. There's a bit of a chiddush, but I think it works out well. Maybe that is just it. The issue is just this. It wants us to figure it out. Now, let's work on that for a second. The problem with learning anything, Gemara, Chumash, anything that you learn in life, is that to really do it in the right way, and to really understand it, is not easy. There's no easy road through it. And as we said before, there's no way to just get everything down and just understand it automatically. You have to spend extra time on it. You have to work harder on it, think harder, and try harder than you do by anything else. And that's the way it goes. That's the way learning is. Granted, it might be easy to read for some of you because you know Hebrew better. Granted, it might be easier to understand the concepts because you learned these concepts when you were younger. That could be. That could very well be. But to fully understand what's going on in the Gemara from the beginning to the end and know what the flow is and why and the who's and everything, that takes a ton of work. An absolute ton of work. You know, eventually, hopefully you will come to that point where you get the Hebrew down so well that you're flying through it. And you're getting the Aramaic down so well that you're flying through it. It really isn't that much Aramaic. But you're flying through everything, and then all of a sudden you sit there and you're like, wait a second, but that's a contradiction to what we just said over there. And that you should be able to come up with your own Tosafos. You shouldn't need Tosafos to give you these problems. You should just be able to figure them out on your own. Wait a second, if this is true over there, that can't be over there. If the Rashbam or the Rashi is saying something over here, there's no way you could say that over there. I mean, the point is that while you're learning, it should be difficult. Because nothing is easy. There's always going to be seeming contradictions. If it wanted to be a Rambam, then the Gemara would have been written as a Rambam with all the halachos and that. But you have to spend more and more time on it, and you have to see more and more sfarim, and then you realize after maybe 10, 20, 30 years of learning it and going through it and finding safer after safer and going through as much as you can, you understand a lot more. You get a lot more. And then you realize that the more you know, you realize you've barely started. You've barely touched the surface of what there is to learn. I'm still young, so I still think that I've done a lot in my life. But how many Sfarim in this room have I finished? How many Sfarim in this room have I even looked at? Have I even looked at? Okay, so granted, I don't think I need to go through the Concordancia or the dictionary. I think I'm okay with that. But how many Sfarim here have I not even glanced? I haven't even opened up. And that's just in this room. How many are out there? See, the beauty of Torah is in its depth. The beauty in everyone's life is to think everything through. And to really think it through and to know that there's so much to do over here. Now here's Sean. You wonder why Torah isn't explicit. You wonder why the Torah doesn't just say exactly what it wants and just give it to you. It seems like a girl that all women and all girls and all moms that you've ever had, they will never tell you exactly what they want. They'll beat around the bush and then expect you to understand what it is. So why does the Torah have to be that way? Unbelievable. I'm comparing Torah to a girl, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable, right? This is the reason why. Because there are 70 pshatim behind every pasuk, and there are 70 drushim, and then there are 70 ramos, and then there are 70 sodos. And that's not including the fact that there are 49 facets to every way of learning Torah, which means that within those 70 pshatim, you have 49 facets to be able to learn up every single one of those pshatim. 49 facets to be able to learn up every of the 70 drushim, 49 facets to learn up the 70, etc., etc. This is what Torah is. It's pashut, it's obvious. It's to whet your appetite and to make you want more. Because once you have a taste and you realize what it is, and once you start realizing that this actually makes sense, it made sense to me once before, then you will want to do it more, and you're not going to stop yourself. Because when you realize there's something there, you're not going to want to stop yourself from doing it, because this is awesome. Why would you want anything else? This is pshat. Why the Torah hides the parts of the Meraglim. This was exactly their mistake. Their mistake was not simple. And the mistake isn't written simply to be put in outright words. Because nothing in this world is simple. They were told to go to the land. Moshe Rabbeinu told them, I want you to be a suru, as Eretz Canaan. Not just be Meraglim. Be a suru. Dig down deep. Don't look at the outside of the land and decide from what it looks like what the land is all about. You can walk into the Beis Medrash at Skokie at any day, and you can look inside the Beis Medrash. That will not tell you a thing about what a Skokie guy is all about, what Skokie Yeshiva is all about, or what the purpose is of anybody being here or what we're doing. You can't see things if you're just looking at the chitzonius of the issue, and just looking at the outside and trying to figure it out from there. Look deep inside. The asuru. Go all the way in. The yachteru is really where the line comes from. Dig in to what the land is all about. And this is the idea. The Me'ashiloch really says it in a different way. Be ma'ayin. Take your Eon skills and work into the land and try to figure it out. You see massive fruits. What do those massive fruits mean? It doesn't mean that there are dangerous giants in this land. That's not what it means. It means you're going to need less time to work, and that means you'll have more time to be able to learn. That's what it refers to. If you look at those fruits, that should be the first thought in your head. It's not about, well, the huge giants that eat them, those guys are going to kill us. That's not your thought. Your thought is dig down deep. Why would a Kodesh Baruch Hu put huge fruits here? Why would a Kodesh Baruch Hu want that? So that we don't have to work so crazily hard physically, we can work hard on our Torah while we're still working the land. That's number one. Number two, you see funerals. People dying all over the place. It's not so that you can say that Eretz Ochelet Yoshvahi, that it's consuming its inhabitants and everybody that lives in this land are going to be dead and that everybody's going to die when they live here. That's not what it means. It means that you are being hidden. Everybody's so busy in their funerals, they're not going to see you spying out the land. It took Yericho one day, not even a day, to figure out that there were two spies there, that Kalev and Pinchas had walked inside the city. One day they were able to figure it out. These guys, they weren't caught. Why weren't they caught? Because there were funerals all over the place. Look deep down into what the funerals mean. That's what it's supposed to be. You hear them calling you chagavim. You hear them calling you locusts or nemolim, according to Rashi, ants. And that's what they're calling you. Don't think, so therefore, they're going to destroy us because we're just grasshoppers in their eyes. Think that they're not even expecting this. They're not even expecting us to fight them. Which means it's going to be a surprise attack. We're going to get them without them even thinking about it. That's what you start looking at. You see massive fortified cities. You say there's no way that we're going to be able to defeat these cities. That's not the way to look at it. You look at it and you say, look, Jericho's walls fell in a second. All they did is blow a shofar and they fell down. What this means is that they have an ability to make a huge Kiddush Hashem by just destroying one city. Once they knock down the walls of one city of these huge walls, everybody will feel unsafe. Just one time, and that's why they started with Jericho. They started with the hardest city to defeat. The biggest walls, the greatest walls, if anybody has been around the ruins of Jericho today, these walls are the size of this room. They were massive, massive walls that just came down. When Jericho went down, everybody was scared. Everybody said, what are we supposed to do? That's how you should look at it. When you saw Anshei Nidos, men that are that huge, The bigger they are, the harder they fall. And that's all it is. It's just going to be, it's going to be easier for you. See, it depends on how you're looking at it. If you look at it in that way, then that's that. You can look at our base matter sometimes. You could say to yourself, what in the world? This is such a waste of money. Why would guys be here? Nobody's learning. I see everybody either looking at their phones or looking up and spacing out in that. And the truth is, they're not so wrong in that. But that's just not digging down deep enough. It's not digging down deep into the people that are here and figuring out why they're here and what they want to be here for. What is their purpose? Are you going to fail? Yeah, we all fail at times. We all mess up. But are you going to try? Are you going to put yourself to the test and you're going to be there every morning even though you don't necessarily feel it that morning? Even though you don't necessarily want to put yourself into learning, you're tired, you're hungry, you're thirsty, you feel like you're in a desert somewhere, and you feel like nothing can help, but you're going to do it anyway. See, if a person looks into the base medrash and really reaches deep inside every person and starts talking to a guy, starts asking him, what are you doing here? Then it's possible they'll be able to really figure out what's going on. But it doesn't happen by just looking on the outside. So I think this is Mida Keneged Mida. They didn't dig down properly the way they should have. They just looked at the land on the outside and told the people back what they saw. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when writing down the sin of the Meraglim, didn't put down what they were thinking. Didn't put down what was deep down, the real reasons behind it. Just put down the outsides. They just said bad Lashon Hara. And that's that. I think that's the Mida Keneged Mida that you can apply for the Meraglim to be around. Now, they definitely had crazy good Kavanos. There's no question. To keep Moshe Rabbeinu alive so they'd have a better Rebbe, to make sure that they were going to be ready before going to the show so they wouldn't have to use up all of their schuyos, to think that maybe they should live ruchniastic lives in the clouds, learning Torah all day long with the Mun and the Be'er Shel Miriam, rather than have to live gashmias lives where you weren't going to be able to work, where you have to work all day, you wouldn't be able to learn. They had Gaiva for leadership, whatever it was. There were other issues that they definitely had deep down inside, but the Torah doesn't mention any of them. Why? Because they didn't bother looking deep. And if you do the sin of the Meraglim, the Meraglim's hate of just looking at the outside and saying like, wow, Eretz Yisrael is such a great land, but it's crazy, there's no way we're going to defeat it, and not dig down deep inside, you're going to have the same hate when you look at the Meraglim. Oh man, those guys are such idiots. Can't believe they really felt that way. Can't believe they didn't really look down into the land. It's the same exact hate. The exact same thing. I think the physical onesh was also, the physical punishment they got would make sense as well. Their tongues and the worms that were inside came out from their body and showed on the outside to show that their chitzonius really should have been their pinimius. What they should have done is dig down really deep inside, so that's that their insides came out, so to speak. And that was exactly what their punishment was, to show what they should have done and how they should have been mechater within their ideas and try to figure out what was really going on really deep down inside. See, it's a chait not to think. It is an absolute avera to live life without considering the consequences. There's no question about that. Where it falls under might be akasha, but there's no question that to go through life and not thinking about where you're going to go is absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. You have to realize what's going on around you, what's been happening, what's going to be, and to live your life in a daze. And a daze that's so great that all of a sudden you wake up one day and you say like, oh my gosh, where am I going? What am I doing? What's happening to me? That's not a life. It's not a life, because all of a sudden you find yourself older and you have kids and you're wondering why your kids are like this. You wonder and you just can't figure it out. Why they have no covenant for Shabbos, why they have no covenant for Torah, why they have no covenant for a band, why they can't sit down and learn, and you're wondering that. So what have you done since last week? Since the last time we spoke? How much have you gone into yourselves, introspected, and how many of you have written something down, a plan that you're supposed to do? How many of you have actually done that? How many of you have spent more than 10 minutes thinking about the future of your life and what you're going to do, not only for the rest of the summer, but for next year and the year after that? And what's your plan? Do you have a plan down yet? And if you don't, what's wrong with you? What needs to happen? Do you guys need to be picked up and put a pen in your hands and have a piece of paper in front of you so that you can finally write it down? Come on! There's not much else we can do. We cannot push you to the brink. It's your choice. It's your life. And you might be able to get it back 5, 10, 15 years from now, but you'll be wasting 5, 10, 15 years of your life. It's do or die. It's now or never. And if you don't believe me, ask people that are 30, 40 years old and are suddenly waking up and wondering what are they doing with their lives. It's not easy for them to start over at that point. It's not easy for them. And those are the kids that we won't even accept it at high school like this. Those are the guys that we can't bring in because their parents already messed them over by not doing what they were supposed to be doing 20 years ago. Most of you, I've never had a year like this, to be honest with you. Most of you, I shouldn't say most of you, there's a lot of you that are dating. A lot of you that are dating. I don't think we've ever had a year where we had this many guys that wanted to date or are dating or anything like that. I don't think I've ever had a year like this at all. I think maybe the most guys that we had was half or maybe even a third of the amount of guys that are dating right now or that want to date and everything. You want to date? You want to get engaged? You want to get married? You want to have kids? You want to grow up? You want to have a nice job? You want to be able to learn? You want to do everything that comes together? How in the world do you expect things to happen without you having any clue who you are or where you want to be? How is that supposed to happen? How are you supposed to be able to figure things out on the fly while you're in the middle of a date? So what's your plan for life?
Just kind of thinking we'd go to pizza and then we'll take it from there.
Well, that's not the question. What do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Well, good question.
What, are you kidding me? You went into this without considering the ramifications of an answer of what you want to do for the rest of your life? You went into it thinking, I'll just take it as it goes? That's not life. That's not life at all. That is absolute death. That is absolute death. That doesn't make any sense at all. You got to do something. And it's time. Life isn't a joke, and this isn't a joke. Think deeply. Dig down. Figure out what you want to do and figure out why you want to do it. And stop wasting time. There's no reason to waste your time over and over and over again. I mean, thank God it's about this time of year where I'm just like, it's about time where people's TV shows finally end and they're just like, they finally have like a moment to breathe and they're like, oh man, alright, it was a great season. Now what do I do? Oh my gosh. And then some idiots find other TV shows to watch and other series to go into. They're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know this existed. Wow, this is so great. And then other people, they just sit there and they're just like, I'm in denial. Absolute denial. It's like, I heard on the radio once, this is years ago, but when March came along, it was right before March Madness. It was like late February, early March. So it was like right after the Super Bowl, but baseball hadn't started yet. It was like the dog days of the basketball season. Nobody cares about hockey. I don't know, soccer doesn't exist. So sorry, Arian. It's just America. It's the way it goes. But like, there's nothing there. There's nothing to do. And the NCAA basketball tournament hasn't started just yet. And these guys in the radio were dying. They were dying. They have nothing to talk about. They're saying, like, so do you like grass? Like, there's nothing. There was nothing to do. Their whole lives are shot because they've got nothing to do. They'd love to talk about something, but there's nothing going on. There's nothing happening. They're like nitpicking. I'm like, well, there was a game last night. All right, we got nothing. We got absolutely nothing. And that's really what it's like right around this time. If any of you have gotten into these series or TV shows or things like that, it's over. It's over. You got the summer now. So what are you going to do? You're going to watch reruns?
Well, I really wanted to watch that one again. That was really funny.
You really going to do that? Are you really going to? Are you really going to catch up on what you might have missed? Is that really what your life is all about? Making half hour after other half hour after other half hour? Is that really what it all is? Come on, guys. It's an unbelievable waste of time. An absolutely unbelievable waste of time. And I guarantee you that in 2 years from now, you will have no idea what happened in any of the things that you're watching today. Guaranteed. Not one clue. You will not remember a single thing. And if you doubt this, think of a TV show that you watched 2 years ago. Think of the series. And think of five jokes that you can remember from them. And if it was a serious one, where they're all doctors and they're standing around and bad things are happening. Or it was some type of CSI Chicago, CSI Miami, CSI New York, CSI Toronto, CSI God knows where in the Atlantic Ocean. If it's any of those, and you're sitting around there and you're wondering, wow, what could have happened? And it's like, there's another dead person. They probably worked it out in the end and everything's okay. Still remember 3, 4 years, I don't even remember when this was. The series known as 24, it doesn't still exist, right? It doesn't. So 24, when people were literally they were going crazy. 24 hours. and there were 24 TV shows, and they were like going nuts. People were going literally crazy when the last show was going on. They're like, oh, what am I going to do after this? Are you kidding me? This is a crazy bad TV show that has nothing to it. I've never watched a minute of 24. Never watched 1 minute. Oh, if you would have, Rabbi, then you... I have no clue what people can find so exciting about something that you know, in the end, was made up by some random guy in L.A. who doesn't have a life. It's some massive, I don't mean to make fun of this, but it's some massive guy who's like 450 pounds, who's got massive glasses, who's sitting at a computer, who's like, it is a good ending, and that's it. And that is your God. That is your God. Your God is a massive fat guy sitting by a computer, typing up a TV show, and selling it for a couple $100,000 so that a bunch of Hollywood actors could play it, and you're still like, I never saw the one coming. Because you have a life. That's why you never saw the one coming. Because you have a life. And if you really want to give it up, I'm telling you, you will never enjoy life more than when you give up this stuff and you say to yourself, it's all over and it's a perfect time for right now. But of course, that means you'd have to really look into the panemias of the matter. If you really look deeply, then I wouldn't even need to tell you this. So what do you need? What do you need to make this happen? And whatever it is, do it. Because it's such a waste of time and I'm tired of this. Absolutely tired of this. There's no reason why we're not thinking. You can't make it to the base manager every day because it's sort of summer, halfway summer, quasi like summer for the Arctic Ocean, something like that. If that's your problem, fine. I hear you. That happens. Summer days are, it's hard. It gets hard as June rolls around. It gets hard as times are coming down to the end of the semester. I totally hear you. But at least while you're in bed, at least think. At least put down a thought process and sit there and say to yourself, well, I can't be in Seder today, so I'll use this as introspection day. And I promise you, if any of you use that in any text message to me over the next couple weeks, I will personally come to your house or your bed and punch you in the face while you're sleeping. And if you're dead, that's your own problem. I can promise that. But think. Think about what it is. At least use it in the end of the day, at the end of everything. At least use it for introspection time to say about yourself, where am I going? What am I doing in life? And if somehow that gets you to sleep for another 2 hours, well, is that pathetic? Because that's probably not where you're going. But use it correctly. That's the idea. This is the chet of the Maraglim. This is the reason why it's mentioned here. This is the reason why it's not mentioned explicitly. Dig deeper. Because I know you can, and I know you have the abilities, so just do it. Sorry, guys. Have a good day.